Good evening, everyone. Hope you've had a good rest of your afternoon. If you have this time, grab a Bible and turn over to Titus. We're going to do a very specific topical summary of Titus. And I was asked what I was going to speak on tonight, and I'll be straightforward with you. This is probably the most generic, simple, and straightforward lesson I've done. And there's a reason for it. It's because we are dealing with generic, simple, and straightforward topics. Tonight, I'm going to tell you a bit of a story. It's not a personal story. This is one that caught my attention. It was a couple years ago in New Zealand. Now, I've always wanted to go to New Zealand. I love the Lord of the Rings books and movies, and those are one of the prime, like, draws as you go out there and get to see the landscape of maybe where the Shire was and all that stuff. So, very into that. But there was this little community there, a little town, that had a big fiasco take place there. I thought it was very interesting. Like, there was a very, I believe the phrase was like a unexpected conflict in this town. And there was individuals who were getting together, and it was primarily, I think it was older teens to younger adults, and they were getting together, and they were listening in their cars to music, and it would typically range from just Celine Dion. Now, talking about simple, straightforward, generic music, I grew up with Celine Dion. My mother loves Celine Dion. It's a great voice, but she's just kind of generic stuff. But they chose her because everyone kind of was familiar with her. They'd take her songs, they'd listen to it in their cars. They would turn it up as loud as possible. They would kind of compare who had the biggest stereos and all this stuff. They would turn into honking the melodies. And I think even somewhere along the line, there was like the alarm systems were put in to like make it go off. So kind of like just a lot of like chaos ensuing. And they chose it specifically to My Heart Will Go On, which again is the most generic of her songs. But there you go, it's like such a good way. It's kind of like almost wholesome and comical and sweet in its own way. But you see it start to blowing up, and then everyone was doing it in this little town, so much so that the police were getting called, that they were filing reports about it, that there was petitions being signed to stop it. And here's the kicker, is all this was taking place, the honking, the loud stereos, the multiple cars, was all happening at 2 a.m. specifically. So there's kind of the kicker there, clearly. And I thought that this was kind of funny. When asked about it, the ringleader, if you will, says, basically, everyone has a hobby, and while our hobby can be quite disturbing, and we understand how disturbing it can be, we just want our proper safe space away from people to do what we wish to do. And I was like, that's funny, first off. Like, the story itself is almost unworthy of commentary because it stands as its own. It's this kind of comical fiasco that's almost worthy of, like, some sitcom. But if nothing else, there's like, man, I feel like there was a, it's not as harmless as you're painting it out to be. Is you could have made some differences, right? You could have gone out to a secluded area. You could have done it in the afternoon or a little after work. I feel like there were some options here that if you really had to get this out of your system, I feel like you could have, like, I don't know, cut out a few different things. Regardless, my question is, what else were they doing? Like, is this all that they had to their life? Is this the only thing that gave them fulfillment? Why is this their creative expression? And I put it this way because I am sort of, I'm sort of sympathetic to that. Crystal and I have spent the last 10 years or so leading up to this kind of in a rural community. I think there was probably at one point Maryville was considered a small town. But long gone is that, I would imagine. But regardless, whenever you've been in a rural community, you do kind of get that, like, there isn't a whole lot to do, that there isn't a whole lot of activities to engage with. And as they put it, they said, it's definitely better than drinking or partying or clubbing. And it's like, fair, but also, again, surely you could have made some changes. But the point I bring up is this, is we're talking about Titus, and Titus was on the island of Crete, and clearly that was a secluded place. I don't know if it was a small town per se, but again, kind of putting myself in the position of this is Crystal and I, between the two of us, probably worked close to, 18 years in a rural town of working with kids together, combined, obviously. And so we've worked with kids and youth in rural communities that didn't have a whole lot of places to go. And while there's a nice laid-back nature to it, we did kind of start to realize that young men and young women who didn't have a purpose, didn't have much activity, and had a whole lot of free time got into troubles more often than not. And so a lot of y'all who've raised kids, you kind of know that kids tend to get into more issues whenever it's unscheduled and there's just nothing going on. That's not always a bad thing. There's a place for that and there's a space for that. But you do kind of start to realize that when there's nothing there and there's nothing present, you start to see with the lack of direction, the lack of purpose, problems start coming up. Now, I want to take this idea and apply it to the book of Titus. In Titus chapter 1, verse 12, you've probably read this passage before, but Paul is kind of really taking an issue with the false teaching that's happened in here, with salacious lifestyles that are starting to creep into the church. And he quotes one of their own writers when he says, "One of the Cretans, a prophet of their own, said, 'Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, and lazy gluttons.'" That's not like a great endorsement of one's own civilization. But he goes on to say this: "This testimony is true," verse 13. "Therefore, rebuke them sharply that they may be sound in the faith, not devoted themselves to Jewish myths and the commands of people who turn away from the truth." Skipping down to verse 16, he calls this out in their habits. "They profess to know God, but they deny him by their works. They are detestable, disobedient, unfit for any good work." So what I wanted to bring up tonight is, again, a very simple thought. But we're dealing with a community that infamously has its problems ingrained within it. And he challenges them, and he starts to notice this issue that's trickling into their church when he says, "They claim to know God, but they deny him by their works." And the word "works" is used twice in this. Verse 13 says, "They deny him by their works. They are detestable, disobedient, and unfit for any good work." Now, the word for good and work are often together, kind of popped out to me while I was reading through this. This place, this location is an aggravated and rather toxic place, perhaps secluded even, that there is no opportunity for doing good within them. And I bring this up because what we see being an issue for Paul, or rather the strategy for Paul, is that he's really trying to challenge them to take advantage of the opportunity they have to show good works. And again, I said that this is going to be a very generic lesson tonight, but there's a reason for it, is because those who understand that God is good and claim to know God, their actions, their works, their energy, and what they live their life for has to reflect their belief. Let's go to chapter 2. Chapter 2, verse 7. He just got done talking about the different roles and the different requirements and the different commands to each different generation here. But in verse 7, he starts calling out Titus specifically as a young evangelist. He says, "Show yourself in all respects to be a model of good works. And in your teaching, show integrity, dignity, and sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about us." And again, what he's saying here is, you claim to hold to God. You claim to be a proponent of God. You claim to be someone who has experienced the goodness of God. Your actions need to demonstrate, ultimately, what your faith rests in. You need to show the goodness of your God based off of where you are. There's a suggestion that is far from a stretch within this book, as well as the entire Bible, that in order to avoid the foolishness of man, in order to combat evil within you, in order to be an advocate for your God, you simply must, and again, this is really challenging and hard stuff, you simply must do good. It's not limited to the idea of I'm a good person because I do good works. No, but it's more this idea of that those who do good with the time that they have don't seem to demonstrate, those who choose to not demonstrate the goodness of God seem to demonstrate that they have not experienced the goodness of God. But in reverse, those who have been shown good cannot help but do good unto others. It's reminiscent of James 2 when it is said, "It is not the hearers of good that are good, but rather it is what? Those who do good." It is the doer of good works. Those who spend their days approaching a good God, what do? They simply do good. I told you this would be challenging stuff. The words for good and good works are combined of the words kalos and agathos. Kalos means that of morally excellent and correct, and agathos means closer to that of the quality of an individual. In other words, while there's different distinctions, we're going to combine both tonight and notice them being used throughout the book of Titus, because they keep being brought up. And this is kind of what I want our simple, central thought to be as we both start this and end this today, which is we who have tasted the goodness of God have good expectations placed upon us. If we have tasted God's goodness, if we have experienced the kindness, the generosity, the mercy, and the compassion of our God, then we have good expectations placed upon us. And this is the first thing that we who have experienced the goodness of God must do. Our expectation is this, is to come and fall in love with doing good. It's as simple as that. If we have tasted the goodness of God, then we are invited to come and to see and to love the doing good for others. Let's go down to chapter 2, verses 11. This is what he says in verse 11. For the grace of God, For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation for all people, training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions, and to live self-controlled. Again, showing this proactive mission that we have to be more than just passive. We have to demonstrate self-controlled in a lack of self-control generation. We also need to live upright and godly lives in this present age. In other words, keep avoiding the pitfalls of the society around us, right? That's kind of what he's saying here. Instead, verse 13, waiting for the blessed hope. And I think that that's pretty interesting. Again, he's demonstrating here that we who love God accept the idea that we live sort of in a stagnant reality, that we are waiting for something more. We are waiting for the promise of God. But what do we do, or why do we wait? Waiting for our blessed hope, the appearing of the glory of our great God and Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us to redeem us from all lawlessness and to purify for himself a people for his own possession who are zealous for good works. And that's the real challenge here, is that if we have tasted God's goodness, we have been invited to be a part of the people who are the possession of our God, who wait earnestly for him, and in so doing, demonstrate that they are zealous for good works in this life. They are passionate. They are excited for it. They see and understand. The world might see and understand why we are zealous, because we belong to him. And this passage kind of speaks to all of that, I suppose. We are zealous for goodness because Jesus Christ, our God, saved us from evil to be his. When we understand that we are zealous for doing what he demonstrated and defines it as goodness, to be zealous is to be one who is earnestly committed to a side or a cause, enthusiast, an adherent, and a loyalist for something of good. So, if you and I have been shown good, we will come and understand and love the process of goodness within our lives and the liberal gift of it that I, through Christ, get to give to others. But secondly, if we have tasted the goodness of God, not only do we come and love doing good, but we make time for good works as well. Let's skip down to the next verse where it says, declare these things, exhort and rebuke with all authority, let no one disregard you. He's challenging Titus as this younger minister to take like the role of authority and say, this is something that is really essential for you to do. And he tells them this is what they need to take with them. Chapter 3, verse 1. Remind them to be submissive to rulers and to authorities, to be obedient, and to be ready for every good work. He goes on to bring other ideas of combating evil versus good, but this is really the idea here, is that we need to be ready for every good work. This is kind of something I've put together where I was talking to our kids about this, and while I think it's prevalent for kids, it can also be prevalent for our own lives. And I'll just read the quote. Consider the opposite of what we've described here. So many of us have lives so chock full of school, studies, extracurricular activities, sports, and our own enjoyment that there is no place for what matters the most. And again, I sense this not just in kids, but also in all of us, that sometimes our life are so full that we don't have time to really embark on what matters the most in us or in our life. Service, activeness in God's will, and so much more that in chapter 2, verses 1 through 6, again, he mentions like all these different classifications of men and women, older versus younger. So clearly this is an all people's issue. This is an issue for every man and every woman in the body of Christ. If left without good and gospel activity in our lives, without understanding that we have been called for more, we actively, we naturally pursue that which is selfish, that which is without satisfaction, and that usually leads to that which is abhorrent. Paul instead calls for Titus to instill within his people a love and passion for good that is so embracing of it that they will carve out time for it. It is at the front of their ambition. And the word for ready is the same word for the bridegroom situation that Jesus described, the bridegroom feast. The table was set, the food was prepared, the invitations were sent, and the one preparing is ready and has already accomplished the mission. In that story, no one showed. But ready, the idea of being ready is to be considered it done mentality, of someone who is eager and willing when the moment arises. And why is that? Because they have already seen, been zealous for good, and they have already tasted that the goodness of God, and so they do not need to be coerced into it. And the third mindset I want us to understand here is that if we have tasted the goodness of God, we do so by building our structure around doing good, building our lives around the pursuit of it. Let's skip down to chapter 3, verse 8. Chapter 3, verse 8 says, "The saying is trustworthy, and I want you to insist on these things, so that those who have believed in God may be careful to devote themselves to good works. These things are excellent and profitable for people. But avoid foolish controversies, genealogies, dissensions, and quarrels about the law, for they are unprofitable and worthless." The idea of to be devoted to good works is the idea of allowing it to be the chief of your life. The word itself has a leadership nature and history to it. It's about what you allow to dictate you and lead you and be the one who calls the shots. So the question is, who is your leader and your manager? Who is the one that calls the shots for you in your life? Is it work schedule? Is it weariness or fear? Is it dispassionate apathy? Allow Paul's words to bring fire to you that we have been called to be devoted to good works within our life, to allow it to be a part of our routine and our rhythm, to allow it to instigate us and our family and everything that we prioritize. Those who love Jesus and have been shown the goodness of God will put doing good into their DNA, into their pattern, into their habits, into their routine, and into their all. Speaking of Lord of the Rings, there's an old Gandalf the Grey who once said, all we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. And what he was saying there, in a sense, was like, we have limited time and limited opportunity, so what are we going to use the moments for? Maybe Paul puts it better in Galatians 6, verse 10, when he says, "So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith." This was a tweet that I saw and saved years ago that I thought was really sweet. I kind of wanted it to be a thought whenever we would have a child at some point, and now we do that, we would start implementing for them. He said, "I started asking my 12-year-old son, who did you help today, instead of how was school?" And it allowed him to start changing his wiring. He now starts his stories with, "I held the door open, I helped a friend with math, or asked someone to sit with us at lunch." Now he proactively shares how he was helpful at school. And again, that's just a sweet ambition. Like, that's very kind and good. But it sort of sets the precedence of, like, this is what we do. Is we are not passive. We are not just here in empty space. But what we are those who are involved, are a blessing, and show good to others. Here's the thought. In chapter 3, verses 10 and 11, he talks about a lot of wasteful things. He says, don't waste your time with foolish myth. And again, that's more specific towards false teaching, but it's demonstrating here that they are wasting their words and wasting their brain resources and wasting their energy on things that ultimately don't fill up to good. And it causes foolishness, it causes sin, and it causes a lot of division within their congregation. And what he says is, if what you do is you spend your time and your resources and your opportunity for doing good, you start to see it do a lot of different things. Something we discuss a lot with kids is the idea of putting yourself out to do good is not obviously fun initially. It just doesn't feel like it's worthwhile. It doesn't feel like it's something that's for you. It's for others. And so to be self-serving just does naturally feel like an act of sacrifice, as it kind of is. But the point is that doing good organically over time, once it becomes who you are, starts to feed your soul, starts to give you purpose, and starts to mean more to you than what it even means to those who you are doing good to. The point, and I think of what Paul is really trying to get across is this, is that we who have tasted the goodness of God have been called to demonstrate it in our lives, right? That we've been called to do it zealously, with readiness, and to do it devotedly. But what all those elements do for us, when we love it, when we prioritize it, we make time for it, it starts to feed us. Doing good, again, as simple and straightforward and as kind of a generic of a lesson as it might be, doing good does good for us. And that is how our good God created us to live, to exist, to feed, and to survive in this world. There is wasted time, and that's not the end of the world. But what we have been called to do is to do good because we have a good God. If there is anything you need, if there's anything we can pray with you for, if you yourself have not met your good God and experienced a relationship with him through repentance, through confession, through taking him on in baptism, through faith, then we invite you this opportunity. One of our elders would be happy to talk to you or to meet with you in the back. But if there's any need you have, please make it known to the congregation as together we stand, together as we sing.